afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Friday, June 29th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Friday, Melody.
Last trading day of the quarter, I do believe.
Indeed it is.
And I'll be all excited to see exactly how well our economy has done in this last quarter. And let's get to the gold prices today. We have gold up $4 in the aftermarket today. New York spot price, $1,253. Silver's up 10 cents today at $16.18. Platinum was up 4 at 857, and palladium was up 9 at $957. The USDX today was trading slightly weaker, down 0.69 at 94.61. Crude oil was up 85 at 74.30. And the paper markets, I do believe they're off their highs of the day. I thought at one point they were up over 200 points. A far cry from that. Their Dow is up 59 points, 24,275. The NASDAQ was up 6 points at 75.10. The S&P was up 2 points at 27.18. 10-year yield, 2.85%. That's not moving. Euro, of course, was a little bit stronger today. European markets and Asian markets were stronger. Fear continues to creep into the markets, and Bitcoin dipped 58.87, so back under that 6,000 level. So it's not a buying opportunity, ladies and gentlemen. The only buying opportunity out there is in gold and silver. That's it. It is a steal at this point in time. You know, yesterday we talked a lot about oil prices, why they were higher, several reasons, you know, the problem that they're having in Texas, of course, the problems that they're having in Canada with the fire that shut down the refineries, and, of course, the promises of OPEC. But, you know, as we've seen in the past, a lot of their promises don't match to a hill of beans. But still, crude oil is certainly up. Yesterday I reported it was up 13% in the week. And so that is going to affect U.S. drivers. We talk about that. So we have U.S. drivers. They're going to be dishing out about $1 billion more just to pay for gasoline this July 4th than they did last year. Again, we had crude oil jump to $73 a barrel on Wednesday. And, of course, following a record week-over-week decline in commercial inventories, GasBuddy, the analyst at GasBuddy, estimate the cost to motorists for a gallon of regular gas will reach $2.90 for the first 4 days of July. Last year, the gas cost an average of $2.22 a gallon for the holiday weekend. This year's price is the highest since the U.S. drivers paid $3.66 a gallon in 2014. It's hard to believe we were paying $3.66, $3.66 a gallon just in 2014. Time flies.
Some painful months.
Yes, they were. U.S. refineries produced more than 10 million barrels of gasoline daily last week, but a record of 3 million barrels a day were exported. GasBuddy's head of petroleum analysis, Patrick DeHaan, he urged travelers to check gas prices before crossing a state line. And, of course, I don't think they have gas wars anymore like they used to in the good old days, Dave.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We have a large regional chain of mini markets here in our area. On one side of town, gas selling for $2.99 a gallon. On the other side of town, which is probably three, 4 miles away at most. It's selling for $292. Now they happen to be in different counties, you know, and so that probably drives that. I don't know
taxes.
About yeah that well yeah I don't
might
know.
Be less taxes.
Yeah, but I don't know about state line issues, but you know, motorists should mind the state line and, you know, find the best side to fill up on if there's a big difference. In some cases, we're seeing that consumers are spending an extra $25 on a single tank when refueling on the wrong side of the line. The price difference between Oklahoma and Colorado, for example, 40 cents a gallon. Gasoline costs about 50 cents a gallon more in Colorado than in Utah. Now, gas prices this week are selling for $3 or more in seven western states, California leading the way at $3.72, followed by Washington, Nevada, Oregon, Utah, Idaho, and Arizona. Then on the other end, it's cheapest in South Carolina, where it's $2.49 a gallon, followed closely by Alabama, then Mississippi, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Tennessee. Now, pump prices typically reflect crude oil prices quickly and price declines more slowly. National average price hit a high this year of $2.98 over the Memorial Day weekend. Melody, and speaking of gas and long trips.
Well, I'll tell you what, beware of the truckers. An 87-year-old former insurance salesman, 87 years old, God bless him, he needs a job. He hasn't saved enough money for his retirement. And we have trucking companies that are desperate for workers. And they're willing to give this 87-year-old a job. Driving a truck.
Tractor-trailer.
They said age didn't matter. If he could get his CDL license, they'd hire him for $50,000. I mean, 87 years old. One even offered to pay his tuition for driver training school. But he had to commit to driving an 18-wheel truck all over America for a year. So far, that has been too big of a to ask of this gentleman who doesn't want to spend long stretches of time away from his wife of 60 years.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Priorities, Melody.
Yeah, she's probably 86. He says, the more I think about it, it would be tough to be on the road Monday through Friday, he said. As the nation grapples with historically low-level unemployment, trucking companies are doing what economists have said firms need to do to attract and retain workers. They're hiking pay significantly, offering bonuses, and even recruiting people they previously wouldn't have considered. Now, Dave, I'm not so sure that that's a good thing, that they're considering an 87-year-old to drive semis.
Yeah, gosh. I don't know what to say about that. I'm almost speechless, but I guess it shows the kind of job market and economy that we're living in, and that sector, it sounds, is near desperate, or so desperate for workers that it, you know, it's extending its reach that far. But you know what we're reading, it's not working. You know, the industry reports a growing labor shortage, 63,000 open trucker positions this year. And that's a number that's expected to more than double in the coming years. Obviously, that could have, you know, a large impact on the American economy. Nearly every item sold in America touches a truck at some point. You know, that explains why challenges facing that industry, including trucking companies rapidly raising prices as they raise wages, have special power to affect the entire economy. You know, already delivery delays are common. Businesses such as Amazon, General Mills, and Tyson Foods are raising prices as they pass higher transportation costs along to customers. You know, Walmart executive called rising transportation costs the company's primary, quote, headwind on a recent call with investors. technology insiders like Elon Musk. They hold out driverless trucks as a solution, but you know, industry leaders say that is many years away, hopefully. For now, the industry simply can't find a way to move goods as fast and as cheaply as they have in the past. You know, and this logjam is going to be especially bad, economists say, if competition for truckers pushes up prices so quickly that the country faces uncontrolled inflation, which can easily lead to a recession. You know, Peter Buchvar, who we talk, regularly, he's an investment officer at the Bleakley Advisory Group, said, you know, this shortage is already slowing the economy down. He said, if it takes me a week instead of 2 days to ship products from point A to B, I'm losing potential business. Melody?
You know, and this goes on at TDDS Technical Institute, an independent trucker school in Central Ohio, where this 87-year-old was considering enrolling. Veteran teachers say they have never seen it this bad. They think there are closer to 100,000 truck driver openings. But you know what? They really ruined that industry with regulations. You know, these independent truckers were forced out of business by these bigger conglomerates, these bigger trucking companies. You know, so it's kind of like, they restrict them. I mean, to really follow what they have done to this industry. And now they're whining because they can't get drivers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's what they place. I mean, these drivers can't even drive 5 hours without having to, you know, they follow every movement that they make. And hey, I when I see a semi coming down the road, I get out of the way. You know, because you don't know, I guess there is some level of comfort knowing that they might be restricted, they have to take breaks and so forth and whatnot. But in the meantime, they can't make any money. And I can't even imagine what a semi truck costs anymore. You know, I don't think there's enough people that can purchase new big rigs like they did. It's no longer, it lost its, you know, what was that movie with the truckers so long ago?
Not Smokey and the Bandit in that genre, but in
yeah. So it isn't quite the same. But to think that they're that short, 100,000 truck drivers, that's pretty significant. And the job placement coordinator said that as long as you can get in and out of a truck and pass a physical, a trucking company will take a look at you now. Well, that's pretty scary. And I don't know how an 87-year-old can get out of a semi. They're pretty hard, or get in one. They're pretty hard to climb up. But there's only one option right now for most trucking companies, and that's give substantial raises, and that's all going to follow down to the final cost of these products. And they're offering, the TDDS are offering jobs that pay $60,000 to $70,000 with full benefits and a $4,000 signing bonus. In interviews with more than 60 trainees, recruiters, and people who explored trucking but decided not to take the job, most feel higher pay will help, but the industry problems are much deeper than that. It still remains one of the most dangerous professions in America. There were over 1,000 fatalities among motor vehicle operators in 2016. So that means being a commercial driver is nearly 8 times as deadly as being a law enforcement officer. Trucking jobs require people to leave their families for weeks at a time and live in a small cabin with a hard bed. You have divorces are common. Veteran drivers say that their children actually forget them. It isn't an easy life. A life on the road is often costly, unhealthy. You have the drivers that sit for hours a day in diesel trucks. They pull into truck stops that usually serve greasy hot dogs, and you know, so the food isn't good. Weight gain and heart disease are common. Trucking often competes with construction and manufacturing for workers. Both of those industries have been on a hiring spree lately. But unlike trucking, construction and factory jobs typically don't require additional schooling. To get a commercial driver's license, an applicant needs to attend several weeks of school. And again, that can cost about $7,000 and that's before financial aid.
Boy, that sounds like a real big challenge, you know, and as it has trouble recruiting new members, the industry's also struggling to hold on to them. You know, turnover in the trucking industry is up to 94%, according to the American Trucking Association, meaning most drivers at the major trucking companies don't spend more than a year in their jobs. Boy, based on what you've just been saying, there's no surprise there. Lately, the industry has tried to broaden its appeal, but women still make up just 6% of drivers. Still, trucking can be a pathway to a middle-class life. But while, the TDDS faculty love trucking and they serve as cheerleaders for the industry, most of their own children have gone to college and now work desk jobs. Otto Smith, who's an admissions rep there, said, "Trucking is seen as a last resort if people can't find another job. But we're a hidden diamond for people looking for work."
Well, but you know something else, Dave, too. You know, when we were talking about the genre, you know, with Smokey and the Bandit and the Truckers and 10-4 Good Buddy and all that, the roads, were they in better condition? You know, our infrastructure is crumbling. The amount of traffic on the roads today compared to them, it'd be a nightmare to get some of those big semis into some of these areas. I mean, they do, but it isn't easy. You know, and it, you know, the amount of traffic and I would think it is a much tougher job today than it was back in the, you know, 70s when it was glamorized.
Undoubtedly.
Much more difficult. And yet, again, inflation, you know, we talk about inflation. They might be getting $60,000 or $70,000 a day. But again, going back to those times, how much more has it increased? Has it kept up with the rate of inflation? Probably not. Well, you know, a lot of people talk about tax cuts. People don't see the more money in their pockets, but maybe that's because many of them don't even realize that they're getting more. And maybe it's because a direct deposit could be the reason. And do you think that's possible, Dave?
Absolutely.
You do?
I do. I mean, I don't think it's nearly the problem that the anti-tax crusader Grover Norquist thinks it is. I think that there are other reasons, namely that the tax cuts have turned out to be smaller than I think people thought and were told they would be. And that the bulk of them are going to much higher income individuals.
I agree with you. And we're going to be heading into this break. We'll be right back in just a few minutes.
We will find you at
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And I have to, my allergies, ladies and gentlemen, we've had so much rain, and we're finally getting some hot temperatures here on the eastern shore of Maryland. And with the wind blowing, well, you all know how I react to my allergies. I get my little bit of cough, so it's... Is that you? Please mute.
I just thought it was you. No, that was.
Were you doing sound effects for me?
That was entirely a sound effect to show some sympathy.
Okay. Okay. But so, you know, they might have to take over some of these spots to fill you in. But 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We still got the 50-cent pieces, Kennedy half dollars, and Ben Franklin's. Got a few of those left, not many. And just give us a call. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And...
Melody, before you go, someone was asking me, what ages are the Ben Franklins? Are they in a... Do they span a certain time frame, or...
They were minted prior to the Kennedys, so they were minted in 1963. Yes.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
See, that's the kind of service you get, listeners, when you call Discount Gold and Silver. Ask a question, get an answer.
There you go. Right. Well, the big news, and it's interesting to listen to the commentaries on both sides, but a little Europe is all worried about President Trump's meeting next month with Vladimir Putin. Senior officials there, they are getting them, they're all in a little tizzy. It's really kind of funny. But anyway, senior officials, I don't know if I should classify it as funny, but...
Hey, it is what it is.
Okay, it's funny. Senior officials from four NATO member nations tell Jonathan Swan that their worst fear is that Trump is going to clash with American allies at the NATO summit in Brussels on July 11th and 12th. Then they will shortly afterward lavish praise on Putin. These officials say that they would leave Europeans feeling abandoned and would advance Russia's goal of dividing European and transatlantic alliances. Poland's Anna Maria Anders, a senator and a secretary of state, who has mostly nice things to say about President Trump, has told Swan, "We are worried, definitely worried, about the Trump-Putin summit, because you can't predict what's going to be said. Putin can be extremely charming, and it's a question of how the president will react. We're all hoping that Trump will not be charmed into such an extent that he will be tempted to give anything up. Because we don't want him to give anything up. I guess above all, we don't want him to give up U.S. forces on Polish soil." I mean, that's one thing I haven't seen Trump do. He really hasn't given up really anything of late that I can think of.
Just the joint South Korean-U.S. military exercises in, you know, in the Korean Peninsula.
Well,
But that
likely may be temporary, but if that was needed to denuclearize, which I don't think is going to happen, but if that's what it took to be denuclear, I mean, they're there anyway. I mean, it's not like they haven't done these, you know, these training sessions for how many years that they wouldn't know what to do. So, you know, to stop them temporarily to see what North Korea does, I don't know if he's really given up anything. But what they're concerned about, what she's concerned about, is that, yeah, we might leave Poland, you know, to give up U.S. forces. So, and there is one more thing I wanted to say about this. Trump does know Putin. They act like he's never been around him before. But he has. And to me, if anybody was concerned about anything, it might be because of that prior relationship. That would be the biggest concern, because we all know he did want to build there and so forth, and in Russia. And so there is a prior relationship there. So I don't think he's going to be bamboozled by Putin's charm.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, this this fear among the European allies probably stems, you know, in part from you know, prior comments that have been made, and also, you know, what happened at the G summit, the G7 meeting in Canada last month. You know, there, and as you said, there's others are, you know, concerned about what concessions we might make. But you know, Anders, the Polish senator, you know, is unusual in that she holds both U.S. and Polish citizenship, dual citizenship. She owns property in the U.S., and she says she voted for Trump in the 2016 election. Poland is also one of the few NATO nations to meet its defense commitments. So, you know, her concerns, which she says are mirrored across the Polish government, may carry extra weight.
Well, Tony Blinken, he served as Deputy National Security Advisor and John Kerry's deputy in the Obama administration, said Trump has an opportunity to reverse the narrative that he's too hard on our allies and too eager to cozy up to Putin. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. He says he could do so by demonstrating a strong, unified alliance with the NATO members, and then go to Putin and put front and center the widespread concerns across our allies about Russian meddling in our democracies. But
yeah, I think it'll be interesting, Melody, if an agenda of that summit is leaked or released to the public before Trump and his team head to Finland for the summit, just to see. I mean, I think that, you know, it's so often, as we know, about expectations, and you know, part of the expectations issue is trying to control expectations, and so be interested to see what both sides want to talk about.
And
for the record, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, usually when there's a summit, you know in advance. I mean, you had the North Korea summit, and we knew what that was all about. I don't know what this is about. I don't know why it was the importance to, you know, I'm sure they'll talk about Ukraine and, you know, all these other things, but I'm not sure what the summit is to accomplish. So,
don't know.
So,
don't know.
Maybe you're right. You know, maybe
we'll see some you know, decisions, some commitments made about the Middle East, maybe some follow-up on Syria, which hasn't been in the news recently, maybe, you know, about Iran to, you know, to somehow get Putin, you know, to assist in cornering Iran. I'm not sure that's doable given the oil situation, but anyway, yeah, the questions surrounding the purpose of the meeting is, I think, the big interest for a lot of people at this point.
And, you know, it's probably intentional by the administration, because he knows it drives everyone nuts. He knows it's going to drive the media crazy. Well, why they, you know, why, you know, and a lot of the other politicians and so forth. So I would probably think there's a reason why you know we have yet to have an agenda, but you know, because it creates a focus, a distraction. And it seems that's to be sort of, and this is not negative, I'm just observing, it's an observation that it is kind of the, what do you call it, the, when this is just how things are done. You know, because this is how other things have been done with meetings. At 1 minute it's off, the next minute it's on. I mean, there's always this buildup to these special events and so forth. And so that might be part of the M.O.
The M.O. Well, some Chicago community organizer once said, Melody, back in the heyday of organizing in that part of the country, conflict is the essential core to a free and open society. Our president seems to have taken that to heart.
A lot. Not only him, but a lot of other ones have followed suit. You know, they're all in it together. In addition, we have the administration talking about, actually, it was President Trump had told a top White House official he wants to withdraw the United States from the WTO, the World Trade Organization. And a White House source said that Trump has frequently told advisors, we always get taken by the WTO. I don't know why we're in it. The WTO is designed by the rest of the world. He told Chuck Todd on Meet the Press back during the campaign that the WTO is a disaster. And that is true. You know, you can't say that it isn't, but just to leave it is something else. But some aides have tried to explain to Trump that their view that the U.S. does well at the WTO, given the U.S. has an army of trade lawyers and created the system. The economic report of the president for 2018, which bears Trump's signature, the United States has won 85.7% of the cases it has initiated before the WTO since 1995, compared with a global average of 84.4%. In contrast, and China's success rate is just 66.7%.
True, but the president is apparently unmoved by those kinds of arguments. You know, even if his advisors put a policy process in place and try to make sure he's well informed, you know, there's no guarantee that, you know, it won't happen.
I think we lost Dave, perhaps. So we'll see if we can't bring him back. I'm not sure if the producer can bring him back or not. Yes, he can bring him back. So I will continue with this. And the one thing I know about the WTO, I mean, they don't enforce a lot of their laws, though, and it does seem that we seem to win a lot of the cases, and maybe this just isn't something that's really talked a lot about. And, you know, but we see everybody complains about and calling China stealing trade secrets. You would think that would be part of the WTO to keep that from happening, and with manipulations of currencies and everything else. So the consequences of a U.S. withdrawal are really profound, that like Trump's senior advisors, the trade community hasn't seriously entertained that possibility that he would withdraw. And is there a safety valve? Should Trump defy his advisors and announce a withdrawal at some point in the future, he would run into significant legal hurdles. As head of state, Trump, under international law, could make the notification at the WTO, but the U.S. law implementing the WTO agreement states quite plainly the withdrawal from the WTO requires an act of Congress. So what's next? Probably nothing. There's sources say the administration will continue to call attention to various ways which the U.S. Encounters what officials perceive as unfair and unbalanced treatment within the framework of the WTO. The administration will likely continue to push the envelope on all of its trade policies, fully expecting its actions will be challenged within the WTO. But in the meantime, you have China. Has benefited enormously from its acceptance to the WTO, as I had mentioned. It doesn't want global trading disrupted by someone else. It also sees massive propaganda value in portraying itself as a responsible actor, in contrast to the U.S. under President Trump. And it's finding many supporters among nations that in a different time would be on the United States side. It was yesterday China had released a paper, China and the World Trade Organization, and the foreword of the white paper explains, since its accession to the WTO, China has been a strong advocate for free trade. China has comprehensively fulfilled its commitments to the WTO. It's also substantially opened its market to the world and delivered mutually beneficial and win-win outcomes on the other side. What else would they say? So, of course, that's what China is going to release. We're getting close to the break. I'm not sure if we have Dave back yet. We do not, so I'm going to continue. June 10th, earlier in the month, Swiss voters, and I think this is kind of interesting, Swiss voters took to the polls to decide whether the country should switch to a so-called sovereign money system. Those supporting this measure felt that it would make the financial system safer by preventing bankers from recklessly lending and putting people's savings at risk again. So this brings to light an issue that is rarely talked about in the United States. What is money's primary role, and is it being fulfilled? Think about what money is and why we have it. Valueless in and of itself, money exists to serve as an instrument of the economy, facilitating transactions and the activities of those who engage in them. Yet in practice, this is not always the case. Money as it means has become an end in itself. For the most part, money does not serve people. Rather, we all become servants to money. Instability is shaking not only financial markets, but the whole global economy. And inequality has reached devastating levels. Ladies and gentlemen, the system is broken. And at the heart of the problem lies the current design of the Fed, the central bank. The Fed is the single most influential institution in the monetary and financial system in the world. Yeah, it's our bank. Its policies and decisions can change the course of the economic cycle and politics in general. A 1% drop in inflation can increase the fortune of the wealthy by billions of dollars. A 1% rise in the unemployment rate can lead to the misery of millions. That's a pretty powerful impact. Yet unlike with other institutions such as the presidency, Congress, the Senate, the mayor's office, whose every move has high state consequences, the Fed is not run by the appointed leaders. Instead, each of the seven members of its board of governors is appointed by the President of the United States and confirmed by the Senate. And I'm going to confirm that we're heading into a break. We're going to try to reconnect with Dave. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, and I'll be right back. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value. value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. And we do have Dave back. Welcome back.
Hooray, hooray. Yes, internet down, but phone still goes on.
You know, it was only a month ago where Comcast had a nationwide outage. And my phones were basically down almost 2 days. And this is something very similar because my parts of my phone worked today, but there were some that didn't. And again, it was another nationwide outage. So I don't know what's happening to Comcast. Maybe they're just getting too big. And
No maybe about it.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. You know, rudely laughed at me.
I swear I wanted to talk about that, the subject.
Well, I was talking about the Swiss voters' rejection of the sovereign money referendum. And
oh, yeah,
I got down to the
development.
Yeah, and I got down to the part of talking about the Fed and, you know, what their primary role is and that they're really not neutral. You know, they really don't have our best interests at heart. They do not serve the citizens. They do not help with the infrastructure. You know, and, you know, they to me, they were created in 1913 to put us where we're at today. I mean, this is, you know, it's a long process. It's a set of, it's an evolution of what happens when you have a fiat currency. And the wealthy get wealthier, and you know, the infrastructure, the heart of the country, really is destroyed. And you know, we can look at the Bank of England in 2008 at the onset of the Great Recession, the quantitative easing policy it chose to stimulate the economy was to purchase the troubled assets from the institutional investors. You know, it's just all the central banks, you know, did that. So I didn't know if you wanted to talk about their central bank and what procedures they have in place. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, you know, the Riksbank in Sweden does have procedure in place for communication with all their relevant stockholders. It's an interesting model and a good starting point for perhaps democratizing, if you will, our own Federal Reserve. Perhaps there's a new kind of domino effect that you know, positive one that could wash over into other countries' central banks as well. But you know, there's the harmful paradox of electronic money. you know, central banks were created, you know, to issue currency and control its circulation, you know, thus, you know, in theory anyway, stabilizing, you know, the monetary system of their country. You know, today, you know, as we know, most of the money used for payments is not cash, but electronic. You know, it's created by commercial banks, not central banks, and the profit it generates goes straight into the coffers of the private banks, benefiting, you know, above all, their own bottom line, which is to say their stockholders. You know, if the Fed and other central banks were to become the sole issuers of electronic money as they are with cash, the profit from money creation could benefit the general public, i.e. us.
Really?
You know, public and private. Well, in theory, you know, it's done the right way, I guess. I mean, public and private debt could be reduced significantly. I mean, voters in Switzerland, let's you know, get that out there. They ultimately rejected the sovereign money referendum that you know, you started talking about at the top of that segment by 75%. You know, although almost 90% disagree with, you know, the private bank's role there in issuing electronic money. So, you know, needless to say, leaders of the Swiss National Bank, you know, that country's central bank, and, you know, the finance industry, who had heavily campaigned against the reform, were relieved. But still, the initiative demonstrates that frustration levels with the current broken system, and we're talking about the United States and elsewhere throughout the world, are reaching a critical mass. You know, and it seems to invite all of us to step back and seriously consider the need for change, a change that I believe, Melody, like any major system transformations, will have to start from the ground up, and certainly won't be driven by the institutions themselves.
Well, you know, I think, you know, you made a point. People don't understand, not in this country. And I think there is a level of frustration because we've gone through, and you can pin it on the Great Recession to maybe there wasn't an awakening.
Mm-hmm.
But people are working and working and working. They saw things being bailed out, everything, and yet a lot of people had to struggle through that. Many people lost their homes. Mm-hmm. And so there might be an awakening, but I think what we see people how they're behaving today, I'm not talking about the politicians and so forth, but I think to some degree they're reacting. I mean, just read the comments online half the time. You think, who are these people? I mean, they're just downright nasty and ugly. And I think it does play into our monetary system. It does play into the fact that we have a fiat currency. It does play into the fact that everything is getting more expensive. It does play into the fact that everybody is getting too much debt. It does play into the fact that, you know, we are slaves. And I think people are reacting in this different manner that perhaps normally they would not have. So, I mean, that's just my assessment of, you know, I mean, I'm certainly not a psychologist or anything like that. I mean, but hey, just the other day we said that, you know, there's a large part of this country that is psychopathic, you know, but
I'm sitting here in the other end of the line, Melody, shaking my head. So a lot of what you're saying is resonating on this end. We forget. We have short memories.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it's some form of psychopathy. but those of us do remember, and I think when it comes to this financial crisis, I think more remember than not. It just, I think there are other things going on. One, I think, you know, there are people who distrust institutions, and then there are people who don't want to believe that our institutions would not be working for our benefit. You know, the Fed is a classic example of that. I mean, Congress, we know, is the lowest, as an institution, has the lowest ranking of any in our country. I I think the Fed, if people knew more about the Fed and its history, I think that would tend to be lower. I don't know where it stands on.
There'd be outrage. Yep.
Yeah, but I think those of us who see another way, behooves us to educate the grassroots, the rest of our fellow citizens who aren't, who essentially are at the core of our republic and who have the ultimate decision-making authority. Anything short of that, things will continue on as they have been, and to what end remains to be seen.
And, it's difficult to educate the people because you need to educate them about gold. And the biggest educator against gold is all your mainstream media. It was all your financial news programs. It's your president's economic advisor that comes out and says, sell gold. And this is a person that should help with the education of explaining to people what a true monetary system should be. And again, it's a struggle to educate people when you have that hitting them instead of, a small segment of the population, 1% of the population that knows gold, knows money, understands money. And understands the importance of having a currency that is backed by gold.
Now, one only needs to ask, what are the motivations of these people who stand in the way? And time again, we see that. In a sense, it's not to cast criminal aspersions, but it's a conflict of interest. So many of our politicians, so many of the appointed leaders, so many of those running our institutions are vested in the current system, in the stock market alone. Think about how many tens of millions of Americans have a vested interest in a successful stock market for their 401ks. It's nothing. For their retirement plans.
Yeah, but the sad thing, Dave, is they're so dependent on, they don't question the risk that they're carrying. And that's what's going to happen. They're not going to allow them to walk away with all that money. And that's why we have these big crashes and so forth. But that's another. I want to get to this story before we leave.
What's that? Las Vegas?
I want to end the note for this week.
Tell us what's going on in Vegas. Gosh darn it. It's just stars and lights and, poker chips galore.
First, I want to tell the listeners, discount gold and silver, 1-800-375-4188. And you've heard what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Apparently what happens in Vegas may not actually stay in Vegas.
Do tell.
A paranormal researcher named Joshua Warren claims he is the first person to ever discover a time warp, which he found near the city. Warren says he has been measuring the rate of time. I don't know how you do that. How you measure the rate of time all over in areas between Las Vegas and the top secret Air Force site known as Area 51. Last week, he found a spot in the desert just north of Vegas where he claims time has slowed down. Using what's known as a differential time rate meter, also known as a DT meter,
he claimed that on Ghostbusters.
I don't know. Maybe he claimed that for the first time ever, he was able to record a measurement showing time had been slowing down for 20 microseconds, something that laws of physics prove should not occur. That shouldn't happen unless there is some kind of unknown technology being tested nearby that would influence the environment, or if there are naturally places around planet Earth that actually sort of flicker once in a while that'll warp a little bit.
Wow. Well, you know, that same article did say the paranormal researcher says he plans to continue researching around Nevada to see if any patterns present themselves. He hopes he can pinpoint what's behind the finding, perhaps something that's not even present on Earth. The big question, Warren claimed, is not whether or not we have these anomalies, but what's causing them. Is this something natural that gives us a window, you know, a gateway into another world or another level of reality? Or, this is again him asking, is this the byproduct of some kind of weird technology, be it something secret and man-made, or something that's extraterrestrial? Or, Melody, could the researcher simply be chewing on too many old gold nuggets?
Well, that would be good for him, but so.
You know, it's interesting. Speaking of the 20 microseconds, do you remember the movie Contact with Jodie Foster?
Yes.
She's an astronaut who's on this special mission. And while she's she goes on a mission that leads her to what appears to be heaven, where she interacts with her long lost father. And when she comes back, you know, she feels she's been gone for, I don't know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour. And in actuality, there is a time difference. I think on NASA's time clock of something like, I don't know, the half a second or something like that, that suggests that time in fact had slowed down in that situation. So I don't know. It's an interesting concept.
I wish there was a time warp here on the eastern shore of Maryland. I love to slow down time for 20 of a microseconds, but anyway, all things are, I guess anything is possible, and it certainly is. I guess you could draw all sorts of conclusions to it, but interesting. I thought that was interesting.
It's a good story to end the week on. Speaking of which,
we're going to time warp our way into the weekend. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for this hour. We sure do enjoy knowing you're there and supporting us at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. So be safe this weekend, and we'll be back on Monday. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. That's too bad in my dreams.